That there it is. That's the cover image of the episode. We'll get you undies. So
I'm Dr. Sarah, a licensed chiropractor.
And I'm Val, clinical research enthusiast and international board certified lactation consultant.
We are passionate about helping you navigate women's health and wellness topics naturally.
We bring the information and options
so you can make empowered choices.
This is the Empowered Women Podcast. Just a reminder, the information contained in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease or illness or be taken as medical advice. Always check with your healthcare provider for medical advice.
You guys, we couldn't be more excited for today's guest. Val and I have been secretly fangirling for months to talk to Courtney, the founder and the creator of the Keeping Balance Method. This episode is jam-packed with information from Courtney and how she empowers women to use the four phases of their cycles as a tool in the gym. This isn't a biohack. It's not a scam. It's just simply understanding your body and how powerful and beautiful each phase of our cycle is. If you're not following Courtney, hit pause right now and follow her at Courtney Keeping Balance on Instagram for daily posts about cycle syncing. Then meet us back here for, dare I say, one of the best episodes yet.
Yeah.
Aww. Anyway. Welcome.
Thank you.
You just started your own podcast, right?
Yeah, I did.
That's exciting.
I'm just winging it, you know, just trying to have a little fun with it, but we'll see where it goes.
Exciting, winging it.
Yes, forever just winging it. Just going with the flow.
It's so fun. Courtney, we are like so excited to have you on. Sarah and I have had some really good guests, and I'm like, this might be my favorite. You have to cut this part out, Sarah. No.
leave it in.
Leave it in. I am the best.
I know. Yeah. Yes. We'll leave it in. Yeah.
Oh, yay.
Anyway, we'll just kind of jump into it. Like, okay. We've been following your account for a long time. You popped up on my feed, I think, when you were like relatively small, like following with maybe like 2,000, and now you're at like over 100,000.
Yeah. It's been a little wild.
Up in the last, what, like 5 months?
Yeah, I think it was actually last March, or actually it was April, where I remember just like out of nowhere opening my Instagram and seeing like, you know, how you max out your notifications at like 100, yeah. 100, 100. I was like, what is this? And every time I would open it, it was like that. And I'm like, what's happening here? Like, and it just kept going and going and going. And I was like, okay, well, whatever I'm doing, I'm just going to keep doing it. And it's been almost a year now. So it's
what you were doing really was awesome. Being real.
You're yeah. being
real. You were being real with people.
Yeah. Like that was a thing. Like when I started this whole account, I was like, this, either I'm going to do it my way or not at all, because I am not going to put so much energy. Cause you know, it takes so much time and energy and effort and research and all that stuff to like put into social media and be consistent on social media. So I was like, either this is going to stay like true to my energy or nothing, because I don't want it to just suck the life out of me. Like I'm doing this to benefit everyone, but me too. Like I'm part of that. So has to be real. It has to be authentic.
I think it was like, what, a month and a half ago, you posted that video of you taking a walk and you were like, I haven't been on anything because my energy is low.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of being on social media. It's hard.
It is. Yeah. Especially when you are like on social media for one specific thing, like people know you for something. And then, you know, at that time I actually hadn't been lifting consistently. Like I was dealing with a lot of low energy and other things going on. And like my son was going through a sleep regression and I was like, listen, I haven't been in the gym. I'm like a fitness person on Instagram, but I haven't been lifting. Like it's just not going to happen for me right now. Like there's no way to be on 100% of the time, all the time. And that's like, honestly, like exactly what I try and teach women too. So it was kind of like a perfect learning moment of like, yeah, even if this is something that you love and are like really hoping to become consistent with, like you're still going to have seasons where you've got to step away, back off. Like it has to happen. Well, there's no choice.
We can talk about this a little later after we talk about what you do, but I feel like you get a lot. First off, I like to remind people it's not real. right? Like, we show up and we're real, but it's not real life. And we get so sucked in. Like, I found myself, mm-hmm. I had like an hour and a half free yesterday. I could have been like working. I could have been doing anything. I'm like scrolling. I'm like, what are you doing with your life? Like, stop. But
I know
the hate you can get. You talked about the energy. Like, we try to bring energy to our account and information, like all of us, but the hate that you can get in the comments, really, like, you're a real person and people forget that sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they use it as a battleground, you know, just to defend what they think is right, instead of just biting your tongue. Because if we were in real life, you wouldn't say that probably.
Exactly. And I know.
On, like, yesterday I got a comment about somebody didn't like the term that I used for feeding the baby, and I got a little hate for it. And I, first I was like extremely upset, and then they became super respectful and we had a really good conversation. But I'm like, I'm a stranger. I didn't even know this person followed my account. I'm like,
I know.
Don't come at me with like hate words, okay? And like things that you don't agree with. I said, it doesn't mean I agree with it, but I have to be a professional, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh, I know. That's the thing too, is like your response, like the way you respond to those kinds of comments too, is like, you're like on a stage and people are going to see your response. It's not like you're having a private conversation with someone, you know, and you can't read tone on Instagram. So
it's hard.
I feel that. Some of the comments I've gotten recently, like, I've just like, I'm trying so hard. I've worked on this so much, but like trying to let it just roll off of me to the point where I can respond kind of with humor and be like, okay, you know, like, someone commented on one of my posts 2 days ago. They were like, love your nail color, but just so you know, you missed a spot on your second finger. And
they have a magnifying glass out?
Exactly. Like, LOL, okay. Like, cool. Or someone, I think I was doing a response video and I was like doing something else. I was like getting ready, brushing my teeth while I did the response video. And someone was like, wow, can we get this video without, or like, I don't know, some kind of weird comment. And I was like, okay, awesome. I'll just do that right away. You know, like, just the things that people say, like exactly what you said, you would never say that to a stranger in person. Mm-hmm. If you were walking by them and you saw their outfit, and you would never say, wow, why would you wear those weird leggings? I got that comment yesterday. Like, if you wouldn't wear those weird leggings, that wouldn't be a problem. I'm like, oh my God. Anyways.
What kind of like personality type are you?
Well, it depends on what kind of like structure you're talking about. I'm definitely an introvert, but I'm more of like an extroverted introvert. Uh-huh. But I'm also, when it comes to the four tendencies from Gretchen Rubin, I am 100% a rebel. Like the kind of person who, if you tell me to do something, or if I tell myself to do something, like I'll find a way to rebel against it and be like, no, I'm going to do what I want to do, you know?
Is this how your keeping balance method started? Did somebody tell you couldn't?
Yeah,
I know.
Even to like you telling us your story, because your story is really amazing and you did share it the other day. But
yeah, it's, I mean, I feel like I don't know how to condense my story. I mean, everything, like what I'm doing right now is just almost 30 years in the making, you know, like my whole life has kind of accumulated to this moment of building this business. And so to make a 30-year story short, I spent about 22 years in the world of competitive gymnastics. So I was competing in gymnastics until I was like 16, 17. And I left because I was absolutely miserable. I had been for a long time. I was always sick. I was always injured. I was overtraining, but severely undernourished. All of the things, I didn't have any ounce of love or respect for myself for a long time. And then I finally had a moment where I was like, I honestly don't have a choice. Like, either I am going to crumble or I've got to make the hard decision to walk away. So I walked away from gymnastics, but that was my whole identity up until that point. Mm-hmm. So I started to coach. So I went into the world of coaching, and that's really where I discovered kind of a love and a gift for like teaching women and inspiring women in the world of movement. And even when I was a gymnast, movement to me wasn't just like sets and reps and do this amount of routines. It was a language that like my body could speak, that was expressing something that words could never do. So, you know, I just had this incredible love for movement and expression through your body. And that kind of evolved into you know, a love for nutrition and health as a whole. So I thought I was going to be a nutritionist, but at the time I was still kind of recovering from all the disordered eating behaviors that I was dealing with as a gymnast. So it was so hard for me to determine, okay, what is actually a true passion versus what is an unhealthy obsession mm-hmm. or like a, you know, a hyperfixation from a disordered place. So I was like, I don't want to go down that path. I don't want to risk it. So I was like, I don't know what to do. Like I was about to graduate with a degree in nutrition and what do I do? And so I had some, I guess, very influential friends because they were like, just join us. We're going to be nurses. Why don't you apply to nursing school? I was like, okay. So it was, I mean, I'd always been like super nerdy, love the human body, loved. I mean, when I was a kid, I had like a massive anatomy sculpture on my wall.
Yeah. Oh my God. I need textbooks. Wait, my aunt got me a text. This is so weird. My aunt got me a textbook when I was in like middle school or high school. It was called Anatomica. And I mean, I was a science major. I have 2 science degrees, but it came with me to college and I'd be like, I had to teach my friends that there was 3 holes when some girls don't know that there's 3 holes. And I left my old roommates listening to this. Total side note, but her mind was like blown. We're like, let's pull out the textbook. Yeah.
Let's look at the diagram. I had like the original Grey's Anatomy book, like So, I mean, just, yeah, we're on the same wavelength there, but like, in my bedroom, I would be like studying the digestive tract and stuff. And so anyway, just total nerd. I was like, yeah, nursing, absolutely. Because I actually had, before I'd wanted to be a combat surgeon in the Army, like total side note, that was a phase. Definitely got over that. But was like my type A perfectionist talking, like people pleaser, like I need to be the most like successful, you know. Whatever. Yeah. but that didn't happen. So I was like, nursing sounds great. So in nursing school, I was not thrilled or like super into any of the areas that we trained in. Like when I was on the medical surgical floor, I was like, you know what? This is kind of icky, like not for me. And every rotation we went to, I was like, I'm not feeling this. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I kind of committed to this. I got to pick something, but I could feel it in my body that this wasn't going to be long-term, at least in that capacity. So, you know, I graduated nursing school and I went into the ER because it was like the most familiar to me. It was the one thing that seemed the most exciting. I had been in and out of the ER as a gymnast, like for forever. So it felt very familiar. And it was just like that. Yeah. That high stress,
high personality type. I think we all do, but you went after exactly what fits. That, like you said, like the fast paced, high achieving, like craziness.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Just chaos. You never know what's going to come through the door. I was like, well, this sounds, you know, exciting. And I really took it as like a learning experience or like a, like an experiment or research really of like, let's build up like this knowledge and soak in everything that I can so that I can learn how to eventually stop people from getting to the ER in the first place. Because every patient, not every patient, but so many patients that came through were there because of something preventable along the way. You know, it was so many, we had tons of like, you know, the actual emergencies, falling off the roof, you know, accidentally cut my finger off, slicing up the potatoes, those kinds of things. And that's kind of like the stereotypical ER setting. But then the majority of ER patients are acute on chronic situation. So like an acute exacerbation of a chronic preventable disease. And I'm like, where are these people going wrong? Where are we, you know, not serving these people in this community to the point where they're, you know, on 60 medications by the time they're 50. So that's really where I was like, man, you know, I can't be the person. This isn't my role here to get to them when it's already at this place. I want to serve the role of let's prevent you from getting here. So I was constantly brainstorming. What am I going to do? What I want to open my own business. Like, but I just couldn't put the pieces together. But my husband wound up kind of being the catalyst for this change because he changed his career. He joined the Army and we moved across the country. And I was like faced with this blank slate. I'm like, well, I'm not going to go back to a bedside job because that didn't feel totally aligned. And so I was like, what am I going to do? I had a newborn and a 2-year-old, 1.5, 2-year-old. And I was doing the whole 2 under 2 thing at home. And I was like, well, let's start an Instagram so I can just start talking about what I feel passionate about. And it evolved from there. Yeah. So
how long ago was that you started?
I started the account maybe 1.5 years ago now. And at the time I knew that just starting the account was going to be the first step. to, you know, what I knew was, you know, what it would become. I didn't know what exactly what it would look like when I started my Instagram account. I just knew that I had things to share and I had a bigger role to play, a bigger message to spread. And it just kind of came together. I got my personal training license. I started, honestly, when I was pregnant with my second, I was really concerned about how I would become, like, how I would stay active, because I am very passionate about fitness and movement. And I was like, well, I'm going to have two kids. This is going to be harder than ever to, you know, to stay strong. And this is something that I need for my mental health and my physical health. And it's just something that, like, I feel home when I'm in the gym, you know, and when I'm moving. So I didn't want to lose that part of me. And it was, I was afraid. And so I was just pregnant. You know, I have a lot of nights where I was just couldn't sleep, insomnia from pregnancy, and just like reading through research of like, you know, oh, that's interesting. Women have different considerations for training. And then, you know, a month later, I see another study pop up like, oh, interesting. So I just started seeing these different studies come through and I'm like, wow, there really is something here. And so I just dove in. I dove so far into the rabbit hole of the research that existed at the time, which has since grown, thank God, but started putting it together. And then when I got my personal training license and I was going through the different, you know, phases of training, I was like, you know, this is really interesting that certain phases of your traditional strength training and that model really align well with what women go through on a monthly basis. And so that is really where the Keeping Balance method started before I was even licensed as a personal trainer, putting these things together. And I'm like, well, you know what? I'm just going to do it. And so I just started training that way myself as a way to stay consistent in the gym after having two babies and being postpartum and knowing that I absolutely needed it for my mental health. And when I guess it had been a year and I was like, I haven't like given up. I haven't thrown in the towel. I haven't fallen off the wagon. Like, I want to keep showing up. This is working for me. I have been more consistent than I've ever been with exercise post gymnastics, you know, because after gymnastics, it was like, all I knew was high intensity or bust, like healing yourself in the gym, like laying in a puddle of sweat, like not being able to catch your breath for 5 minutes or not at all. Like, it's not worth your time to go to the gym unless you are going to be putting in 100%, you know? And so when I realized that, like, actually I feel stronger and I look stronger and leaner than I ever have with this approach, which is so backwards because you're taught to think that in order to, you know, lose weight or look lean or gain muscle, you have to be going hard every single day, show up every single day, no matter what.
I think that's a failure with athletes in general. Like, if you work out or if you're on a sports team in high school, college, you think you have to run yourself to death to get a good workout in. I feel that. If I'm not, I would prefer running in 90 degree heat because I'm sweating. And that's like ridiculous. It's not even healthy to do that.
There's also the other, so there's that, because we all feel like we need to be killing ourselves, especially women, with everything. But there's also, and Courtney, you may have read this book. She wrote Woman Code, her new one I was reading.
Elisa Vitti.
Which every woman needs to read. I knew about cyclical fitness years ago. A friend who's a personal trainer taught me about it. But then when I found your account through Sarah, I was like, oh my God, this girl is like the real, this is so amazing. But there's the whole, everything is centered on men and men's bodies. And we live in Sarah and I talk about this on every episode. We live in a very patriarchal society and there's not a ton of research. There's not a ton of information because it's way too complicated for women and what works for women's bodies. And Courtney, you probably have seen this over and over again, but the number of women that are constantly like, I'm cutting calories, which drives me nuts, by the way, we can talk about it later. And I'm killing myself in the gym, but I'm still obese. You know, I'm so overweight. I'm so unhealthy. And this is a lot too, as we shift hormonally through the years. And I know this getting closer to I'm almost 40, that it changes you. You have to tweak it and you need to be more in sync with your hormones even more. Like it is, we live in a man's world. And if we don't go find the information, it's really sad, but it's not given to us.
Yeah, I know. And I even feel like when you find programs or things that are claiming to be like by women for women, as I always say, it's like just a men's program, but in pink, because it's, there's no actual change. It's like the only like difference they account for when it comes to male versus female is that like, okay, smaller structure. So maybe like, let's just like lift some 2.5 pound purple dumbbells and, you know, like open any magazine, all of the fitness programs for women are just, I mean, it's the same stuff over and over and over again.
Hand stretching and small dumbbells.
Exactly. Yeah.
With less calories. Down to 1,200 to 1,500 calories a day, because that solves everybody's problem. Yet everybody in this country is plagued with either obesity or some lifestyle disease.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know, the whole fool me once, but fool me twice. You know, at what point are we going to realize that?
We're fooled dozens of times by the time we get 30.
Exactly. Like, okay, take 15. It's really going to work this time, you know? And also just like the time frame, like the just what's expected of women when it comes to like transformations. Everything you see is like, okay, in 6 weeks. And I'm like, no, let's talk after you've been doing something consistently for 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
Then let's talk, you know? And I still hear that with women who are coming to my program. They're like, okay, I've been doing this for 4 weeks. And I'm like, well.
Yes, you have. Good job.
Exactly. All right. Okay. Keep it up.
You just went through a full cycle.
Exactly. Yeah. And so now that's the thing, switching your kind of like unit of time to cycles instead of days or weeks. Mm-hmm. It's got to be cycles.
So can you Sarah and I have so many questions.
I know.
Just because we're still at the beginning part of the conversation, can you tell us about your method? Maybe you can give the people listening, some women don't even know what the four cycles are, and then how they kind of align with cyclical fitness, because for those of you that don't know, that's what Courtney does, and she's going to talk to us about, and it's all about syncing a lot of things with your cycle.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So cyclical fitness is such a game changer, because when like we've been talking about, fitness approaches are really built for men who are on a 24-hour biological clock. Mm-hmm. Of course, there, you know, the different things that can increase or decrease their testosterone over time, not always happening within 24 hours, but for the most part, they've got their circadian rhythm is what's really driving their behavior and how they feel and their performance in the gym. But for women, we have about a 28-day cycle. And within those 28 days, and of course, for every woman, it's different, between 25, 35 days, that kind of a time period. There are four distinct phases that we go through. Now, the medical community will only really truly recognize two halves. So the follicular half and then the luteal half. And that dividing line is the event of ovulation. And so when you are on day one of your period, the first day your flow starts, that's day one of your cycle. And then that, until you're done bleeding, is your menstrual phase. Then when you are coming out of your period up until ovulation, you're in your follicular phase. And then once you hit ovulation, so you can consider the two halves, but I love the four phases, because they really are distinct enough to deserve their own name. Yeah. I mean, seriously. So the ovulatory phase comes next, and that's really quick. It's around 3 to 5 days, because the event of ovulation really takes place in a moment in time, and that egg is gone after 24 hours, and then you move into the luteal phase. But you feel the effects of ovulation and that buildup for a few days beforehand. So the ovulatory phase comes next around 5 days. After that egg is gone, says peace out, then you enter the luteal phase. And that luteal phase is the second half of your cycle. And the luteal phase, we have to talk about this because it is so misunderstood. And the luteal phase itself has multiple phases within it too. And so after you get through your luteal phase, it starts all over again with menstruation. So all in all, that takes about a month. Again, just to reiterate, follicular half is the first half, and then the luteal half is your second half. Ovulation is that middle dividing line, and then you've got menstruation on the front end where you're bleeding. But the four phases is much easier to picture in my imagination. And if you connect it to the seasons of the year, it's even easier to understand. So when you're menstruating, you can think of that as winter, where, you know, you're cold, you're kind of withdrawn, not as, you know, active. And then in the follicular phase, you move into spring. And that's when things are coming back to life. Estrogen is starting to rise. You are feeling more energized. And then the peak of the year is summer, which is ovulation. So that's when everything comes to a peak. That is when you're feeling your most alive and the most motivated, because you've got testosterone on your side there. That's where we're feeling really driven. And, you know, you probably feel your libido increasing, because that's when you're most fertile. That's your fertile window there. And then as you move into your luteal phase, that's kind of like fall. You're kind of riding out that energy of the ovulatory phase for a while at first, and then things kind of start to taper down as winter approaches again. So if we talk about that luteal phase for a second, the first half of the luteal phase is still a great time to be super active. Like, everyone thinks that as soon as you ovulate and you enter the luteal phase, you can only walk. And that is such a misconception. Like, it's still a fantastic opportunity for muscle growth and muscle endurance. And then when you get into the latter half of your luteal phase, that's when all your hormones are like, oh, there's no chance of pregnancy. Okay, hormones are going to tank. And that's when you start to feel maybe PMS, when you're not feeling energized, you just want to go take a nap. And that's where a lot of women feel like something's wrong with them, because they don't have that awareness piece of that's what's actually happening to me on a biological, physiological level. And they assume that they're lazy, that they're not strong enough, that they're just weak, that they, you know, something's wrong with me. And so then they start to shame themselves. Now I have to go harder. Now I have to make up for that lost workout. And so it then just spirals into this never ending cycle of motivation for the gym, and then it's gone. And they just assume it's something was wrong with them instead of a very natural biological process.
And I think, you know, if someone's listening to this and they're like, oh, I don't feel those phases, I just feel low energy, or I don't know or recognize what those phases look like, that could be a sign of like hormonal imbalance.
Of an issue. Yeah. I also wanted to ask you, Courtney. So, and for everyone listening, if you're not aware of your cycle, and like, first of all, you don't use fertility awareness method, this is an amazing reason to do that, because you can really sync your entire life and your fitness with your cycle. What I do want to ask you is, people are on birth control, and so many women are that aren't aware of the side effects or the withdrawal or haven't gotten off of it yet. How does birth control affect this? Because it is a manufactured cycle that's not actually happening. And can you do cyclical fitness on birth control?
Great question. It depends on the kind of birth control you're on. So for women who are on the combination pill, so that's just like the pill that has both a synthetic estrogen and progestin component to it, the whole way that works to prevent pregnancy is to shut down your cycle. And so whereas a natural cycling woman would have hormones going up, down, up, down, up, down, the whole point of that medication is to just flatline everything. And so it shuts down that communication between your brain and your ovaries. And you know, you don't actually have a cycle with that kind of medication. You have a withdrawal bleed when you have your placebo week or your sugar pills. But that's not actually a menstrual cycle. No. So with that, you can actually, you can approach fitness in a way that's syncing to your medication. So it's not syncing to your menstrual cycle. It's syncing to your medication cycle. So it's going to look a little bit different than a natural cycle. The weeks shift back or shift forward. And you know, in my course, I lay it up all down depending on what kind of medication that you're on. But for
That's awesome.
Yeah. Because I was getting that question so much, like, I really want to embrace this lifestyle, but I'm on birth control. Like, what can I do? Or I'm not ready yet to come off. I'm still like contemplating, but like, they just want to take a first step. I'm like, of course. So birth control absolutely does affect the way you train and recover, alters it. And for those who are on the IUD, so if you're on a hormonal IUD, about 50% of women will still ovulate. And if you're ovulating, then that is a menstrual cycle, right? Like, everyone thinks that having a period defines the menstrual cycle. Ovulating defines the menstrual cycle. So with those women on the IUD, their biomarkers are altered, because the way that medication works is to also thin out your cervical mucus and make it not a great environment for sperm. So they're not necessarily going to be able to tap into fertile cervical mucus to know where they are or if they're ovulating, but they could use something like basal body temperature to confirm if they've ovulated. And in that case, then you can follow a natural cycle approach for cyclical fitness. But you're so right. Like, so many women have told me they've come off the birth control and they didn't even realize that fertile cervical mucus was a thing. And commented recently, she said she went to the doctor and they gave her antibiotics because she was experiencing fertile cervical mucus and thought it was, and her doctor was like, it's an infection.
Yeah.
The doctors are saying this. Yes.
This is wild to me. And I know I've talked about this, but it's like, most of the time with infertility issues, the minute people start tracking their cervical mucus is like the month they get pregnant.
Yeah.
Or Basil Body. Like, I'm a huge fan of it.
Basil Body.
Because yeah. I like data. I like to see it in the chart.
I know. Isn't it great?
But, you know, it's just like not everyone's thing.
Why don't we know this as young women?
Yeah, I know. It really should be taught in middle school. Like, when you have to watch that horrible video, whatever it is, when they separate the boys and the girls and they're like, this is a penis. Like, why is that not part of the curriculum?
You're like, I don't care. I don't have one. What is going on in my body?
We talk about this all the time, Sarah. It is, there is such a disservice to young women, and the male body is glorified. If somebody can't get an erection, they go for treatment like ASAP. Women, on the other hand, just like, so I guess I can't have an orgasm. Like, or they just suck it up and they suffer in silence with so many things like pelvic floor. You guys know this. Pelvic floor issues, hormonal issues. Like, instead of, first off, we're freaking amazing. Okay. Like, men should be like, just worshiping.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Okay. We carry the baby, we push the baby out, or it comes through a surgery in your belly, which is even more difficult, you know? Yeah. And we breastfeed. Like, I said to my husband last night, I was like, I swear, I say this every time, maybe for the third one, we can like induce lactation for you, because like, you should just be so grateful. So grateful.
Yeah. 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 And you know what's interesting too, is it wouldn't seem that like, I don't want to say difficult. It's always going to be difficult, but it wouldn't seem that extreme if we didn't also have the expectations put upon us to act like men too, right? So it's like, we can do all these things and it's beautiful. It's beautiful in and of itself, but then it's like, get your body back. You know, when are you going to get back out in the gym? When are you going to go back to work? So if we are a woman living in a man's world, then it's going to be exponentially more difficult than it needs to be.
There's this person that I had been following for a couple years, and she just had her second baby, and she started posting like a week after postpartum her lifting again. And I was like, oh my God, like, I love you so much. You like do such great things, but this is not healthy.
It's not realistic for most women either. I mean, let's be honest.
You have a wound the size of a dinner plate in your uterus right now. Like, that's borderline dangerous. And like, we're
I've seen it a lot. And I've had to mute a couple of accounts that were doing that. I'm like, I just, you know what? No.
I can't support that.
Yeah, I can't. Exactly.
I feel like I commented and you commented back like a couple, this was a while ago, because you said, I think I unfollowed her too. I love this one account, and I was following it for a while, but they were literally putting out information about how like cyclical fitness doesn't work, and like 33% of your time you're like resting then, which is training time you're losing. And I was like, okay, I need to unfollow you. What do you say to experts and people and those in the fitness industry? Because there's a lot of even females that do not prescribe to this whole idea. I'm sorry, subscribe to it. What do you say to the haters really with the cyclical fitness thing?
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where I'm just like, if it doesn't work for you, don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, like, we are all like our individual people in our own bodies. And the thing is, you can't deny that this information is true. Like, there's literally no way to deny this. The research is there. We know that the different phases of our cycle affects our fitness and affects our performance or our ability to build muscle and our recovery metrics. They are different. The data is there. There is no denying that. So where is the argument? I guess the argument really is like whether you want to own it or whether you want to ignore it. Right. And that's not an argument. That's a choice. So that's where I'm like, okay, if it doesn't work for you, then don't do it. But this information is there, and this information can
don't
change.
Don't follow me. Don't comment, because it works.
Exactly. And, like, scroll on, move on.
Thousands of other women.
Yeah. But also, like, I have the evidence in my own body too.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a very distinct difference of how I feel and look 5 years ago and now because of this approach. That's the difference. There is embracing that. And honestly, being allowed to show up as I am and have no guilt over that. That's what's keeping me coming back. So for me, it's like, half of it is the mindset and the headspace that you're in your relationship with fitness. The other half, the added perks are like the science and the, you know, the actual like things that you can record. That's just the perk for me. But really is just that relationship that I've built with fitness and my body. It's bled into my relationship with food. And I hear that from tons of women too. And obviously, I mean, every time I see a reel that's like about cyclical fitness, it's viral because it's resonating so much with women that they're like, oh my God.
It works. Yeah. Like you said, anybody that tries, they can see it. Like I told you, I was introduced to it years ago. And literally I noticed in 1 month, the issues I was having like in the gym, it was like corrected. And even I know when I go to lift heavy or when I go to exercise, I'm winded during those phases where you're supposed to be like, and I don't know if there's any science to that as far as like oxygen consumption or it's probably red blood cell related, you know, at that.
Yeah. Point. And VO2 max. Yeah.
And I'm like, and it's exhausting. So when you, it's like, how can you deny your own biology? We all feel exhausted. Like, you know, towards the end of that luteal and into the menstrual phase. And then critics want to say like, oh, what do we want to go back to the days where women are like sitting around bleeding? Yes. The red tent was a thing. And honestly,
I was just thinking about that.
Amazing book. I'm going to link it in the show notes too, for those of you that want to read it. But really, women should be given the respect and the time to alter their life for that week. And I know that sounds like, okay, well, we want equal rights, or we want to do the same thing as men, and there's all this like contradictory, you know.
Men don't do this. There will never be equal rights among human biology in this regard, because like no matter what, you're not bleeding.
Yeah.
You're not having a 28 to 33 day cycle. Like it's
right.
Not equal.
And so like actually who benefits when women are taught to ignore this? Who wins? It's definitely not the woman, because we're like, wouldn't we want women to be able to function at our absolute highest capacity?
Yeah.
And we cannot do that. We cannot do that when we're ignoring our cycles, when we're ignoring our hormones. I mean, we know that like hormones dictate everything that we do and think and feel. Like we are just driven by all these chemicals constantly flowing throughout our bodies and talking to each other. And why wouldn't we want women to be feeling and looking and performing our best? Why? Who wins?
Right.
That's the thing that I don't understand.
Something, I mean, like going back to that whole like sex education thing, it's like, what is the one real thing that we're taught, or two real things that we're taught is, you know, your cycle is disgusting. Bleeding is disgusting.
Right.
And this is how you don't get pregnant.
Right.
But the not getting pregnant part, you don't even realize as a young woman that that's ovulation. They don't really teach you the four phases. And if women actually knew about the phases of their body from a very young age and the power that each phase had, would we want to go down the path of different birth controls to shut the cycle off? Would we truly understand, you know, the true risks of being on those things? Probably not.
Definitely. Like, especially since in sex ed, it's like what that Mean Girls scene where they're like, if you get pregnant, you will die. Like, and women think that they're just like just perpetually fertile. You know, they're just walking around just ready to get pregnant, you know, when we can only get pregnant 5-6 days out of the month. And the other cool thing to think about too is like, if we knew about our four phases from the very beginning, entering womanhood, would this concept of cyclical fitness even feel like a new thing or a hack? Because I keep hearing it referred to as a hack. I'm like,
this isn't a hack. Yeah.
Yeah. This isn't a hack. This is just who you are. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, it's like seeing eating when you're hungry is a hack. No, it's not. It's responding to what your body is telling you to do.
It's responding to hormonal cues.
Exactly. So when you are feeling tired in your late luteal phase, that's a hormonal cue. That's communication to you because it wants you to respond. Like how much more obvious does your body have to make it? Like, yo, hello, we need rest. Our body is up to some amazing things right now and we need more energy. So you need to take this nap. This HIIT workout ain't it.
The key word in that is we're up to amazing things right now. amazing things.
Yes.
We grow a person. Wait, Sarah and I have talked about this on the podcast before. We grow people. We grow tiny people, and then we put them on the planet. I mean, what better, like, again, we should be very honored. And so, Courtney, I want to talk about too, because we were talking about, like, you know, going hard, and, you know, we're talking about the pregnancy, but the whole concept of, like, constantly going hard, this is hand in hand with the hormonal fluctuations that women experience. I don't think a lot of women or men, trainers particularly, understand this concept that when you do too much intensity, too much HIIT, too much long steady state cardio, the negative effects that it has on female hormones and also why they might be getting results. I mean, can you talk about that a little bit? Like, why that's so detrimental?
Yeah, definitely. So first of all, let's talk about when it is a great time to go hard, and then we'll talk about the flip side. So in the first half of your cycle, where your hormones are generally a little bit lower, you've got estrogen rising, and that's great because you're getting energy from that. And it's great because estrogen and then testosterone rising together, you're getting this great anabolic effect. So this ability to build muscle. And I keep thinking, like, when I'm ovulating, I'm like, dang, this is how men feel every day. Like, oh my gosh, right? So that's a really good time. You're more resilient to stress. So cortisol isn't running the show. You know, your body knows that pregnancy isn't imminent. Like, you haven't entered your fertile window yet. So your body is more willing to spare carbs for you. It's going to give you faster bursts of energy and let you use those carbs. So you're really efficient at using quick access to sugar for high intensity workouts, HIIT workouts, heavy lifting. But then after you have that shift going from ovulation into the luteal phase, everything changes in your body's mind. So it's thinking, okay, we have to prepare our bodies for a potential pregnancy. That's its main job. And even if you don't want to have kids, that's fine. Like, no one's saying that if you're a woman, you have to have kids or want to have kids. Like, that's not speaking to that at all. But your body doesn't know. Your body doesn't know that. And so the female body will operate wanting to protect that pregnancy at all costs. So now it's going to divert resources that you think you need to put into the gym. Those resources are actually going towards building up a uterine lining, preparing for pregnancy. Your digestion slows down because it wants to absorb more nutrients. It wants more time to grab more nutrients for a potential baby. So your metabolism increases. You're burning up to extra 300 calories per day. You're hungry. And so all of those things, it takes a lot of energy. And progesterone, which is the star of the show in the luteal phase, that's a catabolic hormone. It wants to build a uterine lining. But from what? What's it going to take? Where is it going to take that from? It needs a resource to build up a uterine lining. It doesn't just pop out of nowhere out of thin air. So it needs the actual material. And so it breaks down muscle to kind of build up this uterine lining. So in that case, it's catabolic, breaking down. And cortisol, it's not that it's increasing, but that we're a little bit less resilient to high stress environments because of all these resources that are being poured into preparing for a pregnancy. That is when, in the first half of the luteal phase, it's really great for muscular endurance. So actually lowering those the weights, but increasing your reps. Then as you move into your late luteal phase, that's when I want you to focus on restorative movement. Movement, the entire cycle, is important because you're a human being. Human beings need movement no matter what. It's just the approach that you take that makes the big difference. And so when you're going hard throughout your whole cycle and your body is like, whoa, you know, I'm trying to do this, you're trying to tell me to do that, it is exhausting. It is completely depleting your resources. And then you start the cycle all over again. Like, no wonder you're tired. No wonder your magnesium's in the trash.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, people shame themselves for eating, right, whenever they're working out. But if you're in a phase where you're already supposed to be eating like more of a caloric intake, and then you're burning everything and then putting yourself through a calorie deficit at the same time, your body's going to go crazy.
You're tired.
Your body's going to go crazy.
Yeah, you're so tired. And then
you built yourself.
You probably know this, and a lot of people that are listening, I mean, I've had disordered eating. Courtney, I know you mentioned you had. Sarah, I think you have in the past as well. But like the constant calorie cutting, the exhaustion, the brain fog, the tiredness that you feel, and then you have this cyclical situation happening on top of that. Like, it's not, you know, it's not that simple. Like, stop cutting calories, ladies.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a common response to learning that you burn extra calories in your luteal phase is, ooh, that's a good time for me to lose weight. Like, that's
no,
but no, that is an increased demand for calories. So you have to like the supply and the demand, they've got to meet each other, because it's not that you're just, you know, have a faster metabolism. You're just burning things faster. Woohoo hoo. It's because your body is using so much more. It needs it. You have to support it to do that job. Otherwise, I mean, that's why women frequently struggle with infertility, because of lack of energy. Right. So, you know, we've heard of like the red S syndrome or female athlete triad, because right. when you don't have enough energy or enough nutrients to support a menstrual cycle, it's going to prioritize. And fertility is not the priority when you are in a state that your body perceives as not safe or not, you know, Absolutely. Beneficial for mom and baby. It's a protective mechanism to shut down your cycle so that it can divert. It's like, wow, we're not getting enough to support what we need. So don't need that right now. Shut down and let's focus on getting nutrients to your bones. Let's focus on getting nutrients to your brain. And like all of those things become the priority. And it's like an incredible protective mechanism. But why are we putting our body into a state where it has to fight for survival?
Right. I mean, we already fight for survival like every day out there. We should not be fighting ourselves in the same breath.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I think is so incredible about this approach, is that it just bleeds into so many different areas of really teaming up with yourself, being on your body's side, becoming your own biggest advocate. Mm-hmm. Because if you won't, who else will? You know, like no one's coming. It's you. This is your body and it's your home that you live in, and you've got to protect it.
If somebody has had like a whirlwind, for lack of a better word, of hormonal like disruption in their past, and they want to do a program like this, before really starting, or can they start the journey as they're figuring their cycle out?
100%. Yes. So if someone doesn't have like a distinguishable cycle yet, the one thing that you can start with is just by like syncing out to the moon phases, because the moon is a constant with the menstrual cycle.
Yes. And
So,
okay. So Sarah and I love,
this so much.
We love the spiritual. We love the woo. So and Courtney can talk about this more, but I do want listeners to know this. And I've known this for very many years. A lot of people are shocked to hear it. You can sync your menstrual cycle, not when you're on birth control, when you are just have your normal hormones, with the moon, by blacking out all light and opening your blinds, guys.
Yeah.
It's not a bigger picture. I mean, really.
I know. I love zooming out and seeing how everything in planet Earth is working together. Everything that's alive is working in cycles. And of course, those cycles can sync up. And so your circadian rhythm and being exposed to the amount of light the moon is putting out, that can affect. Yeah, I know you guys we're talking the same language. I know.
Everybody's trying not to like.
I know. Yeah. And they used to call it like red witch versus white witch, whether you ovulated or menstruated with the full moon or the new moon. I tend to menstruate with the full moon and then I ovulate with the new moon.
Mm-hmm. I'm pregnant again, but I was like, I only had 3 cycles between my last pregnancy and this one. I'm like, I don't even know.
I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there are so many different things like within your body. So like your internal environment is stronger than the moon. So if, you know, things like illness and stress, that's going to alter the cycle, your cycle length. So it's not always going to sync exactly. Right. But if you need some kind of a structure to start with, if you don't have a distinguishable cycle and you want to start this approach, then just got to go along with the moon, baby. You got to embrace that feminine connection. And beyond that, then once you're supporting yourself with good nutrition and good sleep and stress management, then, you know, those biomarkers are going to start to come back. You're going to see, did I just pee myself, or is that fertile cervical mucus? And then you can start to
post about that the other day.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I was like, Oh,
yep. That's when someone told me, oh, if you didn't wear weird leggings and that would solve that problem. I'm like, okay.
No, that's not.
Yeah. I'm just going to put shorts over my leggings so that you don't have to deal with me dealing with my cervical mucus. Like, okay. Yeah. Deuces. That was a side note, like in gymnastics, like whenever anyone was on their period, like, you know, we wear leotards, but then if we were on your period, you put on like little spandex shorts and everyone knew like, oh, she bleeding. But anyway, yeah, it's real. So I even forget what I was talking. Oh yeah, the moon. So once you're supporting yourself and you're seeing some more biomarkers, like once you've got ovulation like identified, then it's so easy to put the rest into place because so now you know, okay, from the time I bleed up until ovulation, I'm in my follicular phase. And then from after I ovulate to the next bleed, I'm in my luteal phase. Yeah. And then you start to feel those shifts too. I think a lot of people rely on like apps to track where they are in their cycle. But I'm like, yeah. stop looking at the numbers, stop looking at the predictions and start looking inwards and at your body and what you're doing. Because sometimes even starting out, let's say you're transitioning off of birth control, things might not actually feel textbook at first. Some people are like, wow, I feel exhausted during my ovulatory phase and I am starting to feel really good during my menstrual phase. So that can, like we said before, be a symptom of like estrogen dominance or some kind of imbalance, right. Or, you know, who knows, a million different things go into this, but you've got to listen to yourself more than a textbook. You're not syncing your cycle to a textbook. You're syncing your cycle to your cycle.
And even people who like, we love data, we love research, we love all of that, but there's a big flaw in that. And that we stop listening to ourselves.
Yes. Right? We talk about this a lot.
People don't listen to themselves anymore. Our intuition is so low. Our perception of our environment is so low. It puts us in bad situations if we're just out in the world, if we're not listening to our surroundings and to ourselves. But if you're really not connected to your body, and you, like you said, I never even thought of that. I know when I'm ovulating.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how it was so easy for us to get pregnant the second time. I know when I'm ovulating. And if you know that, you know everything.
Yeah, exactly. So my husband knows when I'm ovulating too. I'm like, stay away from me.
Oh, yeah. He's like, I feel like he used to know my cycle better than I did. Because he's like, okay, we're nearing like day 28 and you are psychotic. Like, And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, I mean, get in touch. He's like, get in touch with your like body. I'm like, whatever. This was like years ago. But
but you said something significant there. Like the perception that when women change during the late luteal phase, that they're psycho or crazy or whatever, like that. I mean, if you're feeling extremes, like I always say, like we move from phase to phase more like a dimmer and not like a light switch. It's not you change from cycle day 7 to 8 and you're like, boom, now I'm going to act differently. No, it's more of like, you got to like kind of just ride the waves. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't feel like huge crashes, you know, like you shouldn't be feeling euphoric and then, you know, absolutely depressed. Yeah. Like those major shifts, that's a red flag too. So I'm glad you said that. Cause I just was like, oh, we need to know this. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, Sarah, what were you going to say? Go ahead.
This is like TMI, but
no, it's not.
There's
it's
no
not.
Such
we're
thing.
We're here for it.
Not on this topic.
I knew I was ovulating with this conception. And immediate, like I felt the middle schmerz, like pain as soon as we were done. And I was like, well, we're going to be pregnant. Like everything. I knew the moment that we conceived, I knew the moment it happened. And I said to Mike, I was like, we're probably going to get pregnant. And in a month I was like, I don't really feel pregnant. And then I was like immediately, it was like, like two bright lines. But then I was like, well, this baby's probably a boy because like we were already prepared and we released an egg. Baby's a boy. Like everything about this pregnancy has been like boom, boom, boom. But it's because in the last 2 years, I've just been paying attention to my body more and doing more research and actually understanding like the science behind and like the biology behind what conception is. And if women really knew that, there would be so much more strength behind yourself and empowerment in yourself.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's not to say that like, you can cure all infertility with just knowing where you're in your cycle. Like true infertility, it's horrible. Like I've known women who've gone through that, and it really is. It's an awful experience. But I think a lot of perceived infertility is a lack of cycle awareness. Like, I think we can agree on that. But you're right. The second it happened, I was like, we're pregnant.
Yeah, that
happened. Yeah. It's a done deed.
No, it's crazy. I think we talk about this a lot, but I think we outsource our power and we go to the doctor, who a lot of times is a man, if it's an OB or a fertility specialist, and we're like, help us. And what's the first thing they do for so many hormonal issues? We've talked about this on other podcasts, is prescribe birth control, which just covers everything up and never addresses the root of the issue. And then you go to get pregnant and you still don't have the knowledge that you need that you probably should have gotten then.
Yeah. Right. Right. Exactly. Or I've heard from women who said, I was on birth control for 10 years and I got off and realized that underneath I had raging PCOS or raging endometriosis. And they never knew for a decade that that could have been something that they were addressing.
Right.
And they just feel gypped, you know, like robbed of an opportunity to take care of themselves. It's really unfortunate.
I've heard you, I forget who you were doing. You were doing a live video with somebody before and you had mentioned like a history of like mental illness and like suicidal thoughts. Was that like your history with gymnastics and that, or did that have anything to do with like birth control and in cycle?
Yeah. Related? So I was dealing with a lot of mental issues with gymnastics, like as a very young girl, and then moving like into being a teenager, it just got worse and worse. But I was put on birth control, I think when I was 16, and when I was 13, I hadn't got my period yet. And I was at the gynecologist and they were like, okay, if you don't have your period by the time you're 13 and a half, we're going to put you on birth control to induce your period. And I'm like, well, that's backwards, because being on birth control will take away the cycle. It's just like to create the illusion that I'm bleeding every month. That makes you more comfortable. Like, I don't understand.
That's wild.
Yeah, so weird. And then I was on tons of different birth controls, because every single thing I was on, I felt crazy. Like we were just talking about, I felt that like weird psychotic, like, you know, like you're not in your own body kind of a situation. Yeah.
Depression. Yes. Sarah and I talked about this. Not until I got off of Depo-Provera did I realize I was even depressed.
Yeah,
I had no idea. I just thought I was miserable and it went hand in hand with disordered eating at the time. But once I got off of the depo, the disordered eating issue went away. Like the mental health problem.
Yes. Interesting. Yeah. So after I got treated for my eating disorder, I was put on a ton of different medications. And then I went to a doctor and I was like, listen, I feel really great for like 2 weeks, and then I feel horrible. And I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And we now know that that was not bipolar disorder, but it was more PMDD, so premenstrual dysphoric disorder, where I experienced the normal highs of a follicular phase, but then my luteal phase low was really low. That's way so too low. My brain was, when you have PMDD, it's not necessarily that progesterone is evil and causing you to feel this way. It's your brain's reaction and the way it converts progesterone that goes a little wonky tonk, and you can feel extremely depressed, verging on suicidal ideation. You can feel like you need to completely start over, run away from your life, ditch your partner, ditch everything that you know and love, and start over again. And I would feel that every single month, that I would have to start over completely and that my life was a disaster. And so that, now that we know that was PMDD, honestly, getting off of every single birth control that I kept trying, that was 80% of it. The other 20% was moving consistently, nourishing my body properly, and some, honestly, just therapy, like talk therapy, resolving traumas, and just doing the hard work. You know, I just wasn't innately broken. I had to do hard work to heal myself.
We've talked to so many strong women on this podcast, and literally everyone has been through something like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the unfortunate truth.
Yeah.
And it's like,
many, like, think about how many women there are in the world and how many are walking around with a Band-Aid solution that they've been handed. And no one's talking to them about their cycle outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I think that's why this program is so vital.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What is your program? So can you kind of give us like an overview of everything your program goes into? Because I will tell everybody on the podcast, I actually purchased your Unstoppable, your 12-week. I'm dying to get your full one, and I do have a couple coupon codes from you for other things I've like gotten. But like, I'm just like obsessed. I mean, this is so, I like kind of like you. I've always been into fitness. I've always gone hard. I love working out for so many reasons. But like, guys, you got to get one of Courtney's programs. But why don't you talk to us about your keeping balance method? Because I think a lot of people need that info.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's like, if you're starting from zero and you want the information, you want the science, you want the actual methods and the application, like the keeping balance method is the place to be, because that's where you're going to get the full experience and dive into everything so that you have all of the tools that you need to move forward with this approach. And there are really two main goals that I had when I made this program. One, to give you that framework so that you can be moving more consistently, because that's what we want. We don't want you to just like go hard for a month and then realize it's not sustainable and throw in the towel, and then you're not moving for 6 months until eventually you're like, okay, I gotta do this again, you know? So I want you to be moving more consistently, and I want it to feel good. Exercise does not have to be a punishment. I want you to walk away from each workout and being like, I served my body well. Mm-hmm. Not that you served your trainer well, not that, you know, someone else would be proud of you or that you're, you know, someone else is going to approve of it, but that you served your body well that day, no matter what that looked like, no matter how you showed up, and you get to show up as you are. But then also, so it's that empowerment piece, but it's also not letting your cycle be a hindrance or a defect or a flaw, because I think a lot of people say, you know, oh, you're weak in your luteal phase. No, it's not that. It's just that the approach changes. It's that we're just different. So I want you to realize that you can be active and still get stronger with your cycle, and you're going to amplify your results of getting stronger because of your cycle. So it's not just something that we have to work around, but it's something that we work with to benefit us, you know, 10 times, because now our body is getting what it's asking for finally. Mm-hmm. So we're actually feeling good. So when you feel good and you are consistent with exercise, you can't go wrong, you know? So it's not about like having to accept defeat because of your cycle. It's about working with your cycle to, you know, expedite your results, whatever that might look like for you.
One thing that I was just thinking about, oh my God, my pregnancy brain is so bad.
I know.
You said something and I was like, oh, it doesn't matter. I'll cut this out. Oh my God, it's gone. Just
that's all right. Well, I'll continue. I'll explain the course.
Oh my God.
So when you're in the keeping balance method, you have tons of video lectures and modules, and I take you through everything from your hormones and your phases and what cyclical self-care looks like, what that is. And then we go through the blueprints for fitness for each of your four phases. What are the implications for recovery, for preparing for a workout? How are you going to feel, and what's different throughout each phase? How do you approach fitness? What are the best kinds of workouts? And then how do you support yourself through that? And then we go into the practical implications. So how do you implement KBM? How do you implement it for strength training, for cardio, for planning your workouts? How does that look like on paper, trying to plan out what your workouts are going to look like for the month around your cycle and your real life, you know, because you've probably got work, you probably got kids, like, you know, we can't really, in this world, even though we'd love to, we can't make everything come to a standstill because of our cycle. So we may have to make it practical. Otherwise, it's not going to be sustainable. Mm-hmm. So we go over the implementation. And then I have a new module that's KBM and Beyond. It's talking about all the other things that are part of being a woman and being active. I've got guest lectures on there about pelvic floor health. I've got bonus lectures, nutrition, hormone balance, like all of the things. And then KBM comes with Unstoppable, which is the culmination of everything that you've learned, which is a 12-week cyclical strength training experience, where you are actually, you know, some, I've heard feedback already of like, this is the first time I've ever felt good working out on my period, or I didn't know that I could do a workout like this in my luteal phase and still feel good afterwards.
I was going to say, I'm doing the luteal one now. And I would say the end of the ovulatory into the luteal phase is like, it's like fire. It's amazing. Yeah. And you feel so, I'm like shocked. Like you feel so good after.
Yeah, definitely. So like that early luteal phase, I feel like people were expecting like going into the program, they were going to tap into the like cycle day 18 and be like, let's go for a 5-minute walk, do some band stretching and call it a day. I'm like, no, we're going to squat. Let's, you know, let's move on. Let's, it's a slow burn kind of a phase.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What I was going to say is the difference, what it's like with your method and putting this all together. If you really think about how like gym membership works and these other programs that you buy, they're expecting you to buy things and fade out. Right? Yeah. That's how a gym membership works. They want you to sign up and they expect you to quit, but not stop your gym membership. Like that's how gyms stay open, because then they don't get equipment use. They don't have to constantly do repairs. They're expecting people to fail. Yeah. But with this method, it teaches you how to do this long term and how to make this, you know, you're looking out for women as a whole. Like, you're a whole person, you're meant to just keep the longevity of this. And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's about you, like you said.
And do it at home, because I think it's important for us as women to know, not everybody loves to exercise at home, but sometimes it's the only viable option. I mean, I love home workouts, but like, that's just me. So, but you give modifications for dumbbells, like people that are at home that maybe can't get to a squat rack or whatever, where you've got baby sleeping. Like, it's totally doable. It's totally doable. And I think it's important that, you know, we make that note. There are things that you can make it functional if you're just at home.
Courtney's boys are with her in the gym all the time.
Yeah, they are. I know, you see them in all my videos. So I know, I love it. And one thing I want to note though, is that when people think of cyclical fitness, I think they assume that you have to be doing different types of workouts through each phase. Like, you'll see a lot of recommendations, like in your follicular phase, do HIIT workouts and go to boxing class. And then once you're in your luteal phase, go to Pilates class. Like, that's not practical. That's a lot of memberships. That's a lot of remembering. But I think for a lot of the women who come in my programs, they're actually after a goal. They want to feel stronger. Yeah. They have a weight loss goal. And I don't think wanting to lose weight is wrong. You know, like, obviously check your intentions, but okay, you want to lose weight, go for it. But we'll support you in a way that's going to be beneficial for your body. You know, unless we're not going to trash your metabolism or your body in the process. So they have goals. And so the way to achieve any goal is with consistency, right? So with weightlifting, it's not that we're changing the moves that you're doing. We're not changing the style. We're changing subtle things that make up what the Keeping Balance Method is. And that's actually currently being studied right now at William Jessup University in California. There are their volleyball team, I think they are doing KBM at that university. Yeah. And they're comparing it to the women who are not doing KBM. And we're looking at looking at muscle growth and max strength.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, because I hear anecdotally all the time, I PR'd again on my ovulatory phase. This weight feels so heavy. Yeah. Why does this feel so heavy when I'm on cycle day 27, but I could like rep it on cycle day 15? Yep. Like, it's your metabolism, it's your phases. So that's being studied right now. And it's the way that it's aligned with the traditional phases of strength training, where does stabilization come in? Where does hypertrophy come in? Where does max strength come in? And where does muscular endurance come in? It's aligning all of those, you know, tried and true methods of, you know, building muscle for human beings, but just aligning it to make it make sense with a female body. It's like it's like a no-brainer. Like, make it make sense, people. Yeah.
You're speaking to my research heart. So I have my master's is in clinical research. Will you like share those? Okay. So
absolutely.
If you don't publicly do it, will you share them with Sarah and I once?
Yes.
That's 100%. Amazing.
Yes.
How cool is it that you took this program a year and a half later and there's a university studying it? Like,
yeah, that's really cool. That's
it's amazing. Wild. Yeah. Yeah. I have to like pinch myself. I'm not able to like be involved because of bias, of course, but I am helping them just in terms of like giving, helping with research and just like little things like that. So I saw the abstract the other day, and to like see the keeping balance method written out in the abstract of a research study, I was just like, is this real life? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I cried. Not gonna lie.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So it was cool. Really freaking cool. So yeah, that's, I didn't realize how long it takes for studies to really come to fruition, the planning, the funding, all of that stuff. So we started talking about this, like, honestly, it was a week after my course release. She was like, I need to study this, because she had done previous research and was only looking at two phases versus four. So her two phase study, she could see that it was obvious that the results for women who were sinking to two phases were having better results than not. So she wants to see how four phases affects us. So
cool.
Anyway, that's in the works, and I don't think they're actually going to be doing the active part of the study until later this year. So those results, I mean, a long time coming, but it's coming.
That's awesome.
Can I ask one question too, for Sarah? You have anything else for her? Can you kind of talk about, Courtney, for women, because we do have all women across different areas of their hormonal life listening. Mm-hmm. How does this affect menopause? Because I have read, you know, in the Woman Code and the Flow book, you can apply a lot of these principles if you're going through menopause or you're in menopause. Can people follow this method if they've gone through menopause? How does that work?
So once you're in menopause, I mean, the definition of that is lack of the menstrual cycle. Right. So you're no longer cycling and going through those four phases the way that someone would who is menstruating. So the cool thing, though, is that you can start to use strength training to kind of take the place of what estrogen was already doing for you. So that stimulus of strength training is going to help strengthen your bones, things that estrogen used to do for us. Now that your estrogen is a lot lower, we need to not make up for it, but we need to support ourselves the best that we can. And you can still, as a woman, you can still mimic sort of the structure of going a little bit higher intensity here and then 2 weeks of a taper. Okay. And it's not that you're sinking exactly to the cycle, because that's not necessarily there anymore, right? But also going through menopause, like approaching it, perimenopause, that's a really great time to start sinking and paying attention a bit more, because it can be so incredibly beneficial and supportive of reducing symptoms during that time, which I've heard over and over and over again of, I'm 40 something and my cycles are starting to get a little bit different. And so when your cycles are different, maybe you lose touch with what's actually going on. And so your exercise maybe might be a little bit inappropriate for what your body's going through. And so once you start to bring that back together and make those workouts align with what your body's doing, that can be so beneficial and help alleviate a lot of the perimenopause symptoms.
That is so cool.
Isn't it?
Just working out alone and like understanding your body, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure that going through perimenopause, doing a program like this, knowing how your body's changing and actually supporting your body in a positive way through nutrition and movement, you're going to keep your adrenal glands from totally burning out, which is most American women, like that's their biggest problem when they hit menopause. They don't have the adrenal gland to support their hormonal production. So then It's a whirlwind. And what's the alternative?
And can you imagine the difference in experiences between someone who had 20 years cycling, supporting their hormones and their cycles, and then going through menopause versus being completely out of touch and then going through menopause? I mean, I'm sure it's a huge difference. I mean, that's just me thinking out loud, but
that would be an excellent 20-year study, Courtney.
Yes, it would.
If this PI wants to take that on, maybe that's the next one after this research.
Yeah, study. I know, right?
So we always end our episodes with one question.
Oh no.
Oh no.
You're gonna like it. Okay. It doesn't have to be with fitness, it doesn't have to be with anything. It could be mom life, it could be whatever. If there is one thing women can do to feel empowered, what would you say that is?
One thing. Oh, no.
It's like there's a
whole thing.
I know. I want to write a dissertation and like a whole essay on this.
You can get back to us. I'll read it later.
Okay. My right off the top of my head, one, eat more food. Eat more food than you think you need to. Number two, start looking in your underwear. start paying attention to your undies, because that's going to tell you so much about
what you're guys doing. No one ever says that as an answer again, and I love it so much.
That quote needs to be extracted, Sarah, for sharing.
No,
I love it. Yes.
Big bold, yeah. That there it is. That's the cover image of the episode. Look at your undies. So that right there is going to tell you so much and be such a, like, I mean, if nothing else, if you don't want to spend the money on a basal body thermometer, if you don't, you know what I mean? Cervical mucus is free, guys. So just, you know, that's going to be a really great starting point.
Check it out.
You're so right. We're laughing, but it's so true.
It's so basic. So true.
You
don't need to buy anything.
Yeah.
It's taboo because nobody wants to. I mean, people are talking about it more, but we also all follow people like that. See, I forget that a lot of people in my life don't. I'm like, oh, I see all this stuff. You know, I'm bombarded with all this information that I like because I've found those people and followed them.
Right.
Gross, but it's like, people are like, how do I know if it's egg white? You touch it. You touch it.
Yeah.
You have to know.
Stretch it. You look at it. Yep.
Wait, get all of it. You have to touch yourself.
What?
Oh no. Yeah.
Taboo. Anyways, no, those are.
Oh man, I'm not
sure. You were labeling one, two. Did you have a third or two?
You know, no, I'm gonna
end on
undies. End it there. End the strong note. Yeah. Because I'm sure my kids are hungry and need their naps. So we'll end it there.
You know what I see in the future? I see a convention of some strong women in the mountains during a full moon cycle, getting right back to, you know, following the moons, the cycles.
I love
and
it.
Like doing a thing together. I think that would be so much fun.
Sign me up. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. You and I have talked about having like workshops.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Retreats.
Yeah.
Let's do a retreat. Let's go talk to the moon and
It's all the science and the woo and the navigating it naturally, friends.
I love it. I love it.
Love it so much. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys. Thank you guys.
This was so good. So good.
I'm so glad. You guys were awesome to talk to. I love when podcasts are just like natural conversations and not like next question. So
yeah.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more like it, make sure you subscribe to the Empowered Women Pod and rate us 5 stars. Please feel free to also write a review on the podcast. It really does help to spread the Empowered Women message, and it moves us up in the podcast rankings. Plus, we love to hear from our listeners. You can follow us on Instagram at Empowered Women Pod, or if you have a question and want to reach out to Val or I, you can email us at empoweredwomenpod@icloud.com.